This is the audio podcast of the Institute for Research, Middle Eastern Policy in Washington, D.C. Hi, I'm Grant Smith. This week we'll talk about how the growing military budget is contributing to the U.S. economic crisis. We'll look at how the Sibel Edmonds allegations of Turkish, Israeli, U.S., Pakistani nuclear secrets espionage is being handled by the mainstream media, and how the Israel lobby responds to questions about its influence and even its existence. The plunging U.S. economy and drastic efforts by the Bush administration to stimulate consumption through a $145 billion package raise important questions. How did we get into such dire economic straits? It's not all about housing and mortgages. In the year 2000, neoconservative ideologues called for a major overhaul of the U.S. military strategy in their policy paper, Rebuilding America's Defenses. This had direct economic impact on the structure of the U.S. economy, the allocation of resources, and many other factors that are being ignored. This call followed neoconservatives' 1998 letter calling for the overthrow of Saddam Hussein in Iraq on so-called weapons of mass destruction pretext. The overall economic implications of executing policy precepts in the report Rebuilding America's Defenses have been disastrous. The core goals set for the incoming Bush administration, mandated by the paper's advisors, included securing forward military bases in the Middle East and increasing military spending from 3% of GDP to 4% of GDP, unless, as was noted in the paper, some catalyzing Pearl Harbor-type attack occurred on the U.S. 9/11 and the subsequent global war on terror provided pretext for a radical increase in U.S. military spending to finance occupations in Iraq and Afghanistan, and of course hostile posturing toward Iran. This resource misallocation has reverberated throughout the entire economy, cutting off investment in growth industries. Subsequently, the overall middle-class American wealth creation system that benefits average Americans. While it's highly debatable whether the administration's ground wars in the Middle East have stopped any terrorist attacks, the long-term economic impact of runaway military spending in particular has an impact that no longer carries any mystery. Military spending, and this is from OMB, Office of Management and Budget Financial Statements, will consume 6% of gross domestic product in 2008, which is double the level of the 1990s. Military spending will have grown on average 13.36% per year between 2001 and 2008, while the U.S. economy has only grown approximately 2.24% during the same period. Tax revenues collected from individuals increased on average 6% per year over the last 5 years, while businesses have paid revenue that have grown on average 23% per year to pay for increasing military spending. But this has not been enough to close the yawning budget deficit. The United States government continues to spend much more than it takes in any type of revenues. Military spending will contribute to a U.S. budget that approaches $10 trillion by 2010, if not sooner. This is double the 1997 deficit. Management and malfeasance in the economy, the result in many cases of non-enforcement of regulations, including those that corrupted mortgage markets, and military-industrial resource misallocation, has hobbled the U.S. economy to a forecast growth rate of only 1.2% GDP growth in 2008, according to The Economist. This is a quarter the level of the growth during the year 1999. This is the end result of the global war on terror and the policies of the group, the Project for the New American Century. This is the result of following the precepts of a report titled Rebuilding America's Defenses. Louder and even more vacuous calls by this administration to support the troops and other red herring logical fallacies can no longer hide the massive damage wrought upon American households and businesses. Case of an FBI translator
under gag order, Sybelle Edmonds, has been sweeping through Washington and alternative press. She's charged that former Ambassador Mark Grossman participated in a money laundering and international nuclear arms secret smuggling ring, many others according now to her statements to the London Times. Grossman was the former U.S. Ambassador to Turkey, Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs during the Clinton administration, and Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs between 2001 and 2005. Grossman is now Vice Chairman of the Cohen Group, a Washington, D.C.-based consulting firm founded by former Clinton Secretary of Defense William S. Cohen. Sybelle Edmonds has been placed under an unprecedented gag order by a federal judge, ostensibly to protect U.S. state secrets. Congress, after initially indicating interest, has refused to allow Edmonds to testify in public. Mainstream media, for the most part, has not been looking into her allegations, but occasionally it does creep in, particularly during question and answer sessions. They've not yet taken her up on her offer to divulge details of this alleged ring of rogue foreign agents committing crimes in the U.S. soil and abroad. But let's listen to how the Diane Rehm Show, which is a nationally syndicated talk show with high-profile guests, treated a questioner who asked about the case and allegations of Sybelle Edmonds.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Egyptian guards are struggling to reseal the border at Gaza, but Palestinians continue to pour into the country after Hamas blasted through a wall there. Iraq's prime minister announces a major offensive in Mosul, seen by the U.S. as al-Qaeda's last urban stronghold in the country. And new ethnic clashes break out in Kenya after leaders there meet in hopes of ending the violence. Joining me for the Friday News Roundup, Yoki Driesen of the Wall Street Journal, James Kitfield of National Journal, and syndicated columnist Steve Roberts. Throughout the hour, we'll welcome your calls, your questions. Join us by phone at Salem, North Carolina. Hi there, Jim.
Hi. Last night I had the opportunity to listen to Daniel Ellsberg at Wake Forest University. And he said a lot of things that disturbed me. But one of the things he said that I had not heard about was a woman who once worked for the FBI as a translator, Sybelle Edmonds. I've scanned the London Times article that was written on January the 6th, but it's a little confusing to me, and I was wondering what your guest there thought of her claims and accusations.
Yoki.
Her claims have been written about, I think, most extensively. Vanity Fair did a long magazine piece about her. In brief, her claims are that for quite a long time the Turkish government has been trying to buy both influence and also intelligence, and that it had, for lack of a better word, moles within both the FBI and within the sort of policymaking community in Washington. She's been a sort of gadfly-type character, kind of a whistleblower, but a bit beyond that. It's not been investigated in any formal sense. I don't have any knowledge that it is being investigated, but that's the claim.
You know, Turkey is one of those countries, like Pakistan, that has such enormous geopolitical importance to the United States that there tends to be a willingness to overlook all sorts of things, whether it's the strong-arm tactics of the government, whether it's protests of democracy protesters. The value of stability, all you got to do is look at the map and see the importance of Turkey. And I don't know anything about these claims, but I do know historically the American government has been very lenient and very tolerant of Turkey.
All right. To Rick in St.
Of course, the real questions involved are espionage, and particularly U.S. officials and a group of neoconservative ideologues who have circulated and self-promoted themselves through government. Very little to do with just the U.S.-Turkey relationship. But you won't hear this analysis from major pundits. We're going to turn to another little clip from the very same program, which was on January 25th, 2008, in which a caller specifically questions how regional policy can ever change with the presence of an Israel lobby in the United States. And listen to the diversion and debasing of this question.
Here's
by the panelists.
Here's an email from Patrick who says, my question is how long can this situation in Gaza go on? And how long can the blatantly lopsided current U.S. policy toward this situation continue? It's endangered the U.S., makes us appear like blatant hypocrites. No one can even question U.S. policy toward this problem as long as a lobby controls U.S. policy in the region. James.
Well, it gets to the point of why I thought it was such a very flawed idea for the Bush administration to step away from the peace process for so many years, because what they seem to not have understood was that we are seen to be in Israelis' camp unless we were trying to push a peace deal. Now, President Bush has obviously come to that conclusion as well with Secretary Rice's advice, but it's late, and you've got this huge gorilla in the room, which is Hamas. Hamas is a problem. Their only solution they can come up with is to try to...
That was James Kitfield, a senior correspondent with National Journal. But is Hamas really the gorilla in the room? There are a couple of ideas here when we talk about the Israel lobby. Number one, members and associates of the lobby don't discuss themselves. And number two, members and associates of the lobby don't discuss doctrine. They will, however, discuss and always divert attention with discussions of their perceived enemy. Back in 1963, Senator J.W. Fulbright investigated the Israel lobby and in particular paid attention to its public relations activities. He was particularly interested in the precursor of AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, the American Zionist Council. This entity, Department of Information Activities, was detailed in a field report which in particular talked about the importance of public relations activities based in New York to facilitate lobby initiatives. In a report from the Department of Information Committee, quote, "Our newest committee, which has only had its first meeting, and therefore it's difficult to know how it will develop. One of the more important public relations men in the city was invited by the government of Israel to introduce a course on public relations at the University of Tel Aviv, and with the help of the government, map out better procedures for its own public relations effort. Israel was delighted with the contribution which this man made, and he in turn came back excited and deeply interested in Israel and everything for which it stood. We were asked to approach him to build up a committee of public relations men who could be called on when and if problems arose which needed the technical know-how and assistance which only such people can give. Ms. Epstein approached him and found him to be most responsive. He sent out a letter, and last week 15 of the outstanding public relations men of the city sat around this table to consider how they could be of help in presenting a positive picture of Israel in the U.S. Unquote. This is from a report by Amos Epstein of the American Zionist Council's Public Relations Advisory Board, which was subpoenaed as evidence in the 1963 Fulbright investigation of this lobby. Quoting this from the book Foreign Agents, a book which was published in 2007. And this is where we are in 2008.
Let's talk next about an event that shapes the mindset of many people in Pakistan. People in that country, which is so important to the war on terror, often say they're embattled. The war on terror.
Thank you for listening to the IRMEP podcast. To subscribe to a syndicated feed, visit www.irmep.org.